February the 12th at the little cabin out the homestead 16 miles out on the Richardson Highway. And old timers Carl Olson and Frank Dusky, Harry Hughes, and myself. When did you first come in the country, Carl?
I came into the country in 1910.
1910. And how did you come in?
I come in by boat. Victoria. I come to Nome 1910 and took the river boat and up the flat.
You were a young man then, wasn't you?
Oh, yeah, I was a young man, yeah.
First, where was you born?
I was born in Norway.
You remember the country, the name, town?
Yeah. Fredrikstad.
Fredrikstad.
Yeah.
And how old was you when you left over there?
Oh, damn, I don't remember. I must have been, let me see, I'm 77. About 1860, no. I was born in 83.
1883?
That's where I was born, yeah. And I left the old country when I was about 15 years old.
That would be around 1902.
Something like that.
Around 1902 you left there.
Yeah.
And you entered the United States at New York?
No, I got my citizen papers here in Paris.
No, but where did you enter the country at? How did you come on a boat? Where to?
Well, I was sailing on
the... Oh, you
sailed? Yeah, I was sailing from...
Well, when you left the boat, the first time you touched the American shore, what location was it?
In Savannah, Georgia.
Savannah, Georgia, in the south.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was on good trip for a while, and then I shipped and went down to Rosario. And then I come back from Rosario, come up back to Baltimore. That's when I took out my immigration papers, you know.
But you were a seaman in those years.
Yeah.
A sailing ship.
Mm-hmm.
The old time rigger.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You see, I'm not sure if they rigger. That's the reason I want to ask those questions.
Well, Carl, then you got across the state, is that it?
Well, I think it paid off on the ship, you know.
And then
in Baltimore.
Baltimore.
Yeah.
Then where'd you go?
I sailed on the coast here for a while, and on the ship, and come back to New Ireland, Frisco.
Did you ever work the Umatilla?
No.
No, you never worked that boat.
No.
The bear? Any of those old boats?
I was on the Edith for a while.
The Elliot?
Edith.
Edith.
Come up to Cordoba, two trips. And I was on the steam to come to Redondo.
The Redondo? I remember that boat.
Yeah, I was in her.
Well, Carl, what interested you to come up here to this country? I mean, to come up to...
I shipped out for the N&T company on the river.
Oh, the old NAT&T company?
Yeah.
Oh, hell, I remember.
Yeah.
They were a pioneer company here in the early days.
And then I stayed in Iditarod for a while, and I went down to Dyckman. That's just below there.
What year was that?
I think it was 1910 when I came up to Iditarod, to Flat.
Then you did a little mining over there, Carl?
No, I was working in the mine, yeah.
Who was you working for?
Well, it's not fitting for the... I worked for Ben Silverman for a while. He had a lease from John Holmgren.
Oh, yeah.
The flat, open in the flat.
Is Ben still alive, you know?
I don't know. It's a long time since I've seen him, huh?
Yeah. Then, Carl, you...
I went down to Dyckman. And I took wood there for 2 years. I stayed down there for 2 years, something like that. And then me and a fellow named Herman Hansen went across the country over to the Gaines in 1914.
Gaines Creek?
Yeah, I've been landed on Gaines Creek. And I went down to Ufer. And I stayed there in Ufer ever since, up to 42.
Up to 42?
Yeah.
Well, while you were there, you did a little prospecting and some mining?
I done a little mining for myself, but I mostly worked for Eric Hard and John Collins.
Then you come over to the interior here to Fairbanks.
Mm-hmm. I worked with you for a while over there at the NDT, or the USCD.
USCD, that was about, what year was that?
43, wasn't it?
Yeah, I guess
that's 43.
Yeah, yeah, I guess that's 43.
I remember when they built the camp.
Yeah.
That was quite a little while ago.
Oh, yeah.
Now, is there any other questions you want to
ask? Who did you know around Flat and McGrath and down in that country working? He must know Pat Savage and Gus Utilla and all those people working.
Oh, yeah.
How about Sam Dubin and Mrs. Dubin?
I don't know them.
No.
I heard
them.
Yeah,
they
were.
But they used to come down the river all the time.
Well, Frank McCafferty and William Jones. And
Frank McCafferty was a mechanic over there, wasn't he? For the Bureau of Roads, the Road Commission?
Oh, he was working there for a while, but he's staying down below mostly.
Oh?
About 6 miles from home.
Well, isn't that the McCafferty that was around here one time?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a different McCafferty. I can't recall him.
He died over here in the hospital.
Oh? Well,
Evan Jones did too.
Yeah. Is there anything else we can
Then I worked out in Lodge here for 12 years after that. Even I worked for Andy Slashtar for a while down cutting logs.
Yeah, I worked for him too.
Oh, for
I worked for
Swansdall,
I know.
Yeah.
Wasn't he in the lumber business?
Yeah.
He
was
the
Yeah, he had a sawmill down to Panama somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Well, didn't Swansdale make little money? Where was that? Was it in the Keokuk, or where was it he made it?
Gamecrook.
Oh, Gamecrook.
Gamecrook, yeah. They
told
him in the house, I remember now.
He was in Elk
Creek.
Yeah.
Elk Creek.
Yeah. They
did pretty well there.
Yeah, that's where he got his start. And then he had to cost the same up on the Keokuk after that. Him and Johnny Repo had some ground.
I remember Johnny Repo too.
Yeah.
What of interest happened during those years over there that you can remember? Big strikes or any money that was made? Did you ever make any money?
No.
Throw any wingdings like some of them did?
No. No, I wasn't lucky enough to make any. I worked for myself there for about 10 years, but just about to stand off, you know.
Did you ever try your hand at trapping?
Huh?
Did you ever try your hand out of trapping?
No.
No?
Well, Carl, let me ask you, how did you pick up this name, the Singing Swede? Well, how come they give you that name?
It was in 1912 and 13, I guess. It was down in the Clipper Stampede. Call it Foyer now. At that time it was Clipper. I was singing for 48 hours down there once. Up in the pool of Whitey and... Whitey and Lafayette, Bob Lafayette. I was singing 48 hours.
48 hours.
Oh, were you singing for entertainment?
Sure, I was drunk, you know.
Oh, I told him. I wondered what he was singing for.
And that name, I guess, it kind of stayed with you along through the years, didn't it, Carl?
Yeah, it still stayed with me.
Well, that's good.
A lot of people don't know him, but Carl Olsen, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
you had something over there them called for drinking gin, you know, that sort of gin. So we went down the river, get water and mixed it up, you know, so we call it for Yanuka gin.
Yanuka gin.
Yanuka gin. Yanuka, you run right by it, in the river.
Yanuka gin,
yeah. Yeah. Well,
when you worked the riverboat, did you cut wood for them any time too?
No, there was all this wood on the back, you know.
Well, somebody else cut the wood.
Yeah.
You didn't do that.
No, you have to carry some wood off.
Well, they were still using wood when I come in the country on the boat.
Yeah.
They still had their wood places to stop when I used to be at Indiana.
Yeah. Oh, sure, the wood. Yeah, I cut wood for 2 years after that. 5 hours to court. I landed on the back.
Well, Carl, you must have known some of those pioneer steamboat men of the Kuskokwim, like Cap Langley and I guess Green was over there for a while.
George Green.
George Green.
Yeah.
And was
Jack Green
Jack,
over there?
Jack Green was over there too, yeah.
I don't think he was over there, no.
Yeah, he was.
I'm pretty
sure he was. Two of them was over there for a while.
Years before I got there, but he wasn't there.
Mm.
Well, I was there.
Jack Green was over there at the Adair or whatever.
Jack Green was the partner of Captain Langley on the Sophia.
Yeah, that's afterwards. After, yeah.
Well, Sophia was a dead duck. I saw it sticking up in the Lynn Canal when I came by there.
And then the Washburn.
Yeah, yeah, it was in the Washburn. They used to go up to Kaifa.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose you know Arthur Berry over there, Carl?
Oh, yeah.
Arthur's now in Anchorage.
Yeah?
Uh-huh, he's living there in Anchorage. And let's see, you know little Johnny Strand that used to be there? Little Johnny?
He's gone on the grass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Johnny's dead some years ago now.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. And what were those boys there? A couple of brothers of them that had that quartz mill there.
Mesfeld.
Mesfeld, yeah. You must have known them, boys.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. I guess they have left the country now, I suppose.
I don't know.
Yeah.
No, he was on the... Well, he was running the mine up at the Medro, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they worked it out.
Yeah.
Ira Woods and Frank Lawson
yeah.
and them, you know, them were yeah. over there. Out there.
Yeah, they were early days. They were on that, wasn't they? When I knew Ira in the early days, and Lawson, they had a boat.
Yeah, they had a boat.
Going up and down the Big Rod River there. And
yeah, from my Dykeman, too.
Yeah. You know Frank Lawson? Oh, sure. Used to. I used to skate with him in an old roller skating rink here many, many years ago. When I first put it up here. Frank, you know, he used to skate these marathon races here before he ever went down that country.
Yeah.
What is your name now, full name?
Frank Joe Gusky.
And you were born where, Frank?
Santa Fe, California.
Well, you're a native son.
Yeah, I'm a native son.
Well, you remember when California was covered with golden poppies?
Yes. And the way you look, you see, and particularly in the Santa Clara Valley where San Jose is.
You wouldn't know that country now.
No, I don't think so. I think I would. San Jose had about 25,000 people there when I was there.
Oh, okay.
I understand it's about 100,000 now.
You went to school there too, did you?
I went to school there, yeah.
And what year did you leave there to come up into this country?
Well, I left there in 1919, came up to Juneau and Treadwell. I was working for Lester Treadwell Gold Mining Company in San Francisco. And I worked part-time for Lester Juneau. The companies had the same president and they're kind of affiliated in a way. I used to work in the Mills Building in San Francisco for them before the war. Then I went in the Army. I came back where I started to work for them again as soon as I got out of the Army. And then I got itchy feet and so I came to Alaska to work up there because there's more money in it. That was in 1919.
The Treadwell was the richest mine in Alaska.
Was at that time, yes. Hard rock mine, and the caved in. That was the
seawater coming out.
Yeah, the whole thing caved in. Then in 1920, I quit. I went to Skagway, and I already had a job with a MC company, a fellow by the name of Jack Hilliard, the customs inspector at Eagle. He came over there, Richmond from San Francisco, sent him over there to hire me, and so I gave him notice in the spring 1920. I went to Skagway and got the train over the White Pass and stayed at Whitehorse until the breakup. Played baseball there even. Was on there for 2 weeks in Whitehorse.
You mentioned you'd been over in Dawson.
Yeah, well, then after the breakup, we went down the river from Whitehorse and had to come to the ice at LaBarge, at Lake LaBarge, and we stopped overnight there at a place called Jim Boss's Roadhouse. The next day we went down to the 30-mile river that's ahead of empties in there. That's the lower LaBarge right there. That's where Emma Washburn wintered there. We stuck around there until the ice was safe, and then we went down and traveled all down. And I was supposed to go to work for the MC company of Dawson. They hired me, you know, but And there was a flu epidemic in Alaska about that time. Some of the men died. One of them was Larry O'Keefe in Minana. Anyway, instead of stopping the bus, and I was with Richmond and Howard Turner, and they took me on down the river. And we stopped at every place along the river. Then I even went up to Fairbanks in 1920 and came back down. And finally, when I got through with that river trip, we landed at Ruby, and that's where I stayed a couple of months.
What kind of country is it around Ruby when you first come in there?
Well, still mining, just about as much as I do now, probably a little more.
You remember any of the names of the people around there?
Oh, yes. Buckskin Harris, Albert Veronic.
You know how he got his name, Buckskin Harris?
I don't know. No, I don't.
These boys with nicknames, we'd like to get a little information on them for...
I don't know what Buckskin's right name is. Little fellow, he's a muleskin. He worked for Albert Veronic. They used to float out to Long Creek, 14-mile creek and long, and poor men. Then he had Lutro and his uncle John Vick very well. And a lot of them now I've forgotten.
Well, quite a number of old-timers from Ruby. Did you know old Mayfield? We used to have a store there in the early days.
You know, Shell Reddick and Harvey had stores there at that time. Harry Clark had a roadhouse, and Fisher, old man Fisher, had a roadhouse. The Fisher, Fisher girls, one of them had a big garden.
Was any of the Stoops down there then?
I don't recollect any.
Sally Stoop?
No.
Stoop girls?
No.
Oh, there were many old-timers in Ruby in them days, and mostly all gone now.
Yeah, Paddy McKay had a sawmill there. That's where the first airplanes came to Alaska. These people up here hadn't seen airplanes in 1920 also. And some of the squadron of, I don't know what they call them, Black Cat Squadron or something like that. Black Wolf. The Black Wolf Squadron, that's right. They landed in a bar 2 miles above Ruby. One old native woman, Cecilia Carey, was looking at the airplanes, you know, and they were coming along there. And she was backing up, you know, they were going to land on the sandbar, and we were close to the water, and she backed up pretty hard into Yukon River before she knew she was even there. That's the first time I'd ever seen an airplane. Yeah, I went from there to Hot Springs, went back up the river, Hot Springs, worked there for a couple of months, and then bookkeeper down in St. Michael died, and then I went clean down the rest of the Yukon, landed there in the fall, just before the freeze-up. I stayed there for a couple of winters, and built my arm there, and in the spring, in the middle of winter, in 1921-22, I met McGrath, got sick, the bookkeeper there. I was a bookkeeper for NC Company, and I had to take off on the trail. Before I left there, Frank Wiseman came down there to take a job as agent. The other fellow was going out in the spring, his name was Archie Muir. I landed McGrath, who was Harry Carter there at McGrath. The Treadwell Company had just opened up their mines about a year before that. They opened up that hard rock mine. It's about a year, 2 years, I guess. About 2 years. And I knew Wernicke there. Met him there at McGrath, and Lloyd Bullard was the superintendent. Wernicke was a big shot.
Well, Frank, Frank Wiseman you speak of, is he the same Wiseman that was here at...
That's right, yeah, chief of police, and he's marshal.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He actually worked for the NC Company, he quit it again, and then he was marshal, and he was marshal down in Bethel.
Mm-hmm.
Then he quit again, and he was NC agent down in Bethel. Dixie Hall was there, too, afterwards. Well, I was agent up at McGrath, finally. I worked 10 years for the NC Company.
Well, Frank Wiseman, he left the company and died in the States, didn't he?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I was told, anyway.
That's right, I met Gardner over here, too. He was down there.
Oh, Lee Gardner?
Yeah.
Well, say, did Lee ever do any flying?
I think so, yes. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did. He mentioned that, but I didn't ask him directly, but he mentioned he'd fly. He used to have a reindeer meet for the natives and fly it around. He didn't feel the flew some day in Gopher. His mining camps?
Yeah.
Early days, you know, we didn't have anything. No fresh beef or anything like that. You couldn't get it on a boat. Only 2 boats a year up in McGrath. And I was there a long time. There about 8 years, working for the NC.
What year did you leave that part of the country from?
I came over here in 42 after the war started. Everything went to haywire there. I was working for the Road Commission, Shelburg over there, and he asked me if I wanted to come over here to work. He picked up three or four of us, and we came over in a plane in the fall of 42. First job I had was working on a big Delta bridge up here, down here, down below, that steel bridge.
In
42? Yeah, Carl came in shortly after I did. I came in here a little ahead of him over here.
Well, did you know Carl Rothfeld over there? You know,
yeah,
he's now the president of the Grand Digger Pioneers in Alaska.
Yeah, I knew Carl over there. He was the superintendent of the Wood Commission over there.
Mm-hmm.
Then later on, he had a store after he was married. He had a store in Ophir where Carl lived.
He now lives in Anchorage, I think.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, he's got a store in Anchorage today. I've been in his store. This summer I visited with him down the store when we went to the Grand Eagle Convention.
Oh.
Thank you, sir, yet. When you was over in that Ruby country?
In Kreskokrim country, in McGrath.
Did you have a dog team of your own?
Yeah, the MC had a dog team. He kept the dog team, seven dogs, to make trips for us and all, see customers and so forth. Up to Tecotner and over to Ophir. He used to travel over there and out to the creek sometimes. But then in 1923, that's the first time that the people over there ever saw an airplane, and Ben Allison came over with a mail.
1923. I was just wondering, was that the first commercial flight in Alaska?
Yeah, that wasn't actually a commercial flight. He had a contract with the government to make 10 trips, mail trips. Fairbanks to McGrath.
1923?
I think it was 23, I'm pretty sure, when he did that. 1923, or not later than 1924. Anyway, he made seven trips over there, Ben did. He was the first airplane he ever landed there.
And then he had a lot
of them. Oh, Bennett, I'm telling you about for sure. Oh, Bennett came in afterwards. When they came and followed Ben Allison, there was no room. And Joe Crossan came, and then Bennett. And Ed Young.
How about Dorband? Did he fly around?
Frank Dorband came there lots of times. And then the planes came pretty thick after that. But
You were familiar with being a... Nathan, for the MC company, you were familiar in them days, the prices of foodstuffs. What was 100 pounds, or I would say 50 pounds of flour cost at that time over there?
Well, we'll say 100. $15 a hundred.
$15 a hundred?
Yeah.
Well, I wonder what the
You could sell butter, a can of butter. It's $1.25.
Was that a pound can?
No, 2 pound can. No, 2.25.
Two and a quarter
for a 2 pound can, that is an average price.
That was about 1923.
Yeah. Uh-huh. 1920. So we used to be 3 pounds for a dollar.
Uh-huh.
Bacon about 85 cents a pound. Well, it's that much now anyway.
Yeah.
What do you remember about the life of the natives over there and the missionary priests that used to travel around?
Well, Ryan McGrath, there were no missionaries. Only natives. Too isolated. But I was in St. Michael for quite a while. They had missions there, had a Catholic mission, and that's what, and a Russian mission there. And they had them distributed all along the Yukon. Russian missions and Episcopal missions, Presbyterian missions, Anzac and Holy Cross, and all down the river. South mouth of the Yukon, all over.
You remember a German fellow by the name of Homeyer?
Charlie Homeyer, yes.
You remember his family?
No, I didn't see his family. He was up the Yukon.
One daughter is a trained nurse and was working in Portland, Oregon, and the other daughter is married to the second foreman in Indiana today. Little Billy down there, Billy Monroe.
Yeah, Charlie Homeyer, but he used to buy stuff from his wholesaler at St. Michael Post. Send down all the traders along there, small traders used to buy from us.
Was John Cross in that area while you were there? The flyer, John Cross?
That isn't the little Johnny Cross that is around here, is it? Little short fellow?
Married to Beth Cross? Remember Beth Cross?
No, no, that's a different cross. That's a different cross, no.
Well, Was you there at the time Arthur Berry was flying and cracked up three or four
times? Yeah, sure. Over in, he was up in Medford, and they had a little trading post up in Medford. Called it Berry's Landing at first, and then there was another Berry someplace in the railroad, so they changed the name to Medford, the Indian name of it.
Mm-hmm.
I was there when they left there. I was there to help them take stock when they sold it to Clint Wyman's.
Mm-hmm. Well, Clint's wife, I think, is she still got the place?
She's dead.
She's dead.
That's what I've heard, yes.
Well,
I haven't
Clint,
seen...
Clint died, but I don't think she's dead.
Well, Clint died?
Oh, yeah, Clint. He died, right?
Well, I heard the brother died. I wasn't... No. I thought I got it just the reverse then.
Yeah, no. It was Clint. He died here only about a year ago.
Yeah?
Yeah, the old timer was just slipping along.
You didn't know Rotman down the river, too, across the view?
No, too far away. I've heard of him.
He flew all the time. He flew all the time. He don't fly anymore.
No, there were a few of those flyers around that place. They usually came from Anchorage and McGrath, the ones that I Fairbanks, rather. There wasn't much, no bush pilots at that time yet. Just these that hopped from Fairbanks and Anchorage. Made several trips from Fairbanks, so it was pretty well established from Fairbanks to Anchorage before they, from Fairbanks to McGrath, before the Anchorage outfits got it going, like the Star Air Service, and Schoenbeck was interested in that, Art Schoenbeck. I was agent for the company at that time, and Ben Rodeball got started there with Ed Young.
What do you remember about Rodeball?
Well, not much. He was, I met him over here. He was, met him and Charlie Thompson. Charlie Thompson was running, Charlie Thompson bought out Jimmy Rodeball. But he was still working in the railroad as a conductor or whatever it was. And Charlie Thompson, and he sold out to Ed Young, his part of it. He got out of it and left the country and went down to Mexico, and that's the last I heard of him. I guess he got met fire play down there.
You're speaking of Charlie Thompson.
Yeah, and then Ron.
That's right. Well, Frank, what year did you leave the Kuskokwim and come over this part of the country?
1942. I was working for the Road Commission then. I worked here 5 years for the Road Commission.
Then you worked at Ladd there during the early days of the war, didn't you? Or after?
Road Commission, after I was through the Road Commission, I went out to Lavengood, worked for Lavengood Pastures, a bookkeeper out there, for about a year and a half. Then I came in, 1948, I started work for Lab Field.
Was Mac the superintendent when you come in?
Yes.
And did you work while Eric Smith was commissioner? Remember Eric Smith? He was made commissioner after Frank Nash left here.
Oh, no. No, Frank Nash is still working in the Road Commission when I... When I was there, Smith, I didn't know him.
Well, they found him from Juneau, Carousel,
yeah.
Road Commissioner, Everett Smith. He come from Candle. He ran his family over Candle and Nome.
I thought he was in front of that end of Mimi, wasn't he?
Well, Mimi was in on, too. He was in between there.
Oh.
But Smith dropped
him. No, I didn't see much. Oh.
So I knew the family. I knew the kid. Well, is there anything else you want to ask, Frank? Well,
yeah,
we haven't heard this back, maybe...
Well, this has been a Sunday afternoon visit from the Pioneers of Alaska Igloo 4. Frank P. Young, Sr., trustee in the Grand Order of the Pioneers of Alaska, and Harry Hughes recording, and we're interviewing, I'll give you your name.
Carl Olson.
Carl Olson.
The singing sweet.
The singing sweet.
Frank Gusky.
And any story about you, any handle you had?
No.
No, he didn't have any nickname, but he worked for NC Company. This is the end of this tape.
Well, I guess I'll put this here. I got upset in my mouth someplace, so yeah, here.
Now this is February the 12th, 1961, at Fairbanks, Alaska. This recording is a Pioneer Igloo 4 recording. I'll turn this on. Now, Jack Crook, I want you to tell me your full name, where you was born, and what year you was born, and what country, and when you entered the United States, and when you come to Alaska.
All right. My name is John Charles Crook. Born December the 24th, 1886. In Bolton, Lancashire, England. Went to school in that same town. Last year I went to, at 11 years old, between 11 and 12. I passed a regular examination to go aft time to work and after work school. Ralph Palmer, we called it over there. Then at 13, if you ever look at Pegasus, you can leave school. That is, ordinary school. So you don't go to our road. You have to pay to go to our road that time. Mm-hmm. At 13 years old, I got my full attendances and got my full-time papers. I went out full-time in the cotton mill. As I reached her in.
Cotton mill?
Yes. As I reached her in. The drawer in and a twister. The drawer-in has got to have a reacher in to feed in with the ends, what we call ends, the yells. Mm-hmm. He feeds in, you have to see a beam first, and the ends, and you put a comb through there, and tie that comb, and then lower down at the other side of the comb, you stroke those with a brush, and make a half,
half
twist on there, and not. Right along to the end, and he has what you call a reed hook and a bent hook. He has a comb that sits down on the kind of a less wire there, about 3S wire for this comb to sit on. They sit there on the top of the yells, as we call them. They have a little end, just like an eye, we have to put that reed hook through. And you feed them from the other side. You get two of those ends between your thumb and finger and put it right on them. And he draws that through, and he's got a little piece of boxwood with a little eyelet there that he sets in this here, in this comb that's fastened on both sides. He sets that in there, twists it around, pulls the other one from underneath, and puts it on the top of the next place, puts that reed through there for you to feed them again. And you have to keep on feeding them like this, you know, and then you come up there again, and that gets that ready for the winter.
Mm-hmm. Well, what year was you born?
1886. December 24th, 1886.
You went to school in Lancashire, England?
In Bolton, Lancashire, England.
And then you left there at what age?
I went to school until I was 13, then I went out full time. Then I went out to a Capitol Street store. From there, I went over to the furniture factory, and the first policy, I see, by the time you learn your trade, when you become 21, you have to go someplace else. They've always got somebody about 19 or 20 that's, able to do the work by that time. So I went up for the Cooperative Society. I had to go on the milk route for a few months, and so it became my turn to go into the grocery store. So I got into the grocery store, and I had a stay with another boy first. It was iron the potatoes, what we called a flour boy, as probably as a nickname. And he had no cash. At the counter, they gave him a slip, gave the customer a slip. Please supply the boy with. Then chop his initials on the bottom. He takes that over there to the to this boy, and he owns it, puts it on a file, gives him whatever they want there.
He fills the order.
He owns the flour, he owns the potatoes, and he owns the biscuits and the dried peas, things like that. Well then, you get me to a branch yourself, and you have to teach three people too. Each one has to teach three more. Finally, it becomes your turn to go behind the counter and have a place to yourself. And you're responsible for that till. That till has the combination underneath, with your fingers. The manager cannot go in your till and get any change unless you've given permission. At night, he takes your cash upstairs, locks it up in the safe, brings it down in the morning, and gives it back to you. Three times a week, the inspector comes along and gives you some more checks. You give a check with every purchase. But the length of your finger, which you write on there, through the black leaf, and you give the customer that check. And they have a gun sheet to put those checks on until it gets full. Mm-hmm. When it's full, they bring it into you, or anyone at the counter there. The store's here all the way from one manager and the boy to 5, 7, and 9 men in the store, according to the business and what district. So, three times a week they bring you fresh checks. And then, when you come back the next time, if there's any difference between your check and your cash, it says, mentions it there, cash so much, check so much, or check so much, cash so much. Please give me what explanation kind of idea has occurred. One time there's a sovereign short, and it showed up in my till later. So I put cross cash, 3 notes, such a number. You get every 6 months you get a bonus. You get 1 week's holiday once a year and get paid for it. Take your turn from 90 down. Mm-hmm. As you stay there till you become 21, your wages rise every year according to your age. When you become 21, you're on your leave. You may be at this store today, and maybe somebody gets sick at some other store, and you'll be there. Mm-hmm. And from then on, you have to ask for your raise until you become a manager of a store. Mm-hmm. Now, there's 46 grocery branches in my hometown, 13 milk rigs. About half as many butcher shops as there are grocery stores, but one in between a couple of stores. Mm-hmm. And then there's a shoe repair store. There was also the clothing store in the, up where the central was, in the center part of the town. A milliner store occupied a block there. I got a suit made to order for about $15 at that time, in 1906, mm-hmm. my grandmother's funeral. And then you got a check with it, and you get a dividend. Take these checks every quarter, and you get a dividend on it to the main office. Mm-hmm. They have an educational department, and then the board of management. And you're a member of the co-op. It takes about half a dollar to become a member, and then you can receive those dividends.
All right.
And you have a vote in regards to the board of management. And if you happen to want to buy a place, you can go to the headquarters, and they will loan you money to buy the place with.
That's my home.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And let's see, I worked in the grocery store at the supply department at the headquarters, and next door was the grocery. Then there's a separate clothing store and a separate milliner store. And then they had a baker there, and first you sat on the milk department, you deliver milk, there's a driver, and you go with the driver. Then you wash the cans when you come back, and the bread man, the man delivers the bread to each store. I used to pack 4 skips of bread, 4 times 2 pounds, 4 times 21, there's 21 loaves. Mm-hmm. In case somebody demanded a 2-pound loaf, you'd have to take a slice off the store, that it's an old. Mm-hmm. So I used to go backwards and pack 4 skips, and I'm 14 years old. Mm-hmm. So
what
wages
did you get then when you bought these? Do you remember about what wages you got?
Oh, around about 5 shillings a week, I guess. Yeah, that'd be about a dollar and a quarter at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe get 4 bits a week spending money.
Mm-hmm.
And when I worked for my uncle, when I worked in the mill with a drawer in, why then of course they give you a little spending money. The faster you work, the more money they make. Of course you get paid by people. So then after, that's right, I went over to a grocery store in Levertown. Then I want to get back to my hometown, that was 8 miles away. I used to ride on my bicycle, or take the workman's car in the morning, which was half price. 8 miles out to this place and 8 miles back. Then I went over to the shoe store. And finally, my uncle, my grandmother died, which raised me. I was working in the shoe store, and it happened to be August holidays in 1906. I came home at noon to have my meal, and my mother happened to be there at the time with 2 children. Let's see, 3 and 1 room. And,
What was your relative's name, your brothers and sisters?
Well, these were half-brothers and sisters.
Well,
now they're alive, I went to see them when I took this trip. Albert is the oldest, he was 3 years old at that time. And, Bertha was 2 years old. And then, Harold was less than a year old. I stayed at Harold's place, and then I'd eat breakfast there, and then go over to Albert's place and have supper. So, as it happened, my dad wrote to me from Vancouver, B.C. And I started to tell him, I said, I don't know what to do. My grandmother's dead now. I feel like I don't want to join the Army, want to join the Navy or something. I just feel out of sorts. So he sent my fur over there. So while I was looking in the store and putting away the shoes we got on sale upstairs, my uncle come down, who I was living with. I moved my aunt and uncle, and he had a message for me from the CPR from Liverpool. Cable issued tickets, Liverpool to Vancouver. Why will you come forward? Steamer sailing Friday. So then I had to make this trip. I had to show this to the manager when he got back from noon, and then he let me go. So I didn't get no wages for that day, for them 2 days, because you have to give a week's notice or 7 weeks' notice. If they fire you, they must give you a week's wages.
All right.
Mm-hmm. So then I went to my uncle's, and I went to visit my father's mother over in another town. a coal mining town, and his brother, and nephews, nieces. And then I went to my... that's the last time I wore my ambulance uniform. I belonged to St. John's Ambulance Association at the time, which was at this Wesleyan Methodist Church at the Victoria Hall, right in the center of the town. It was a Wesleyan Methodist Church right close to where I lived. But this is the place I used to go to. At the Victoria Hall, we had two preachers and two sisters there. And up in the gallery, we had two regular customers, two women who had epileptic fits every Sunday. And we would sit in pairs. Two of us be close together, and two close to the other woman. And as soon as one of those women got up, we'd raise up out of our chairs and follow right into the hallway, a place just right down the Empress Theater, that hallway back there, you know. And she'd stand up there probably for a minute, you know, and she'd fall backwards. One was about 6 foot. And I told the man with me, I said, go and get a chair. By the time he got back to the chair, she fell right in my hands. So there, since she fell in my hands, why, I got down on my knees, undo all tight clothing around the neck and chest, give a free circulation of air. I told him to bring some water. I motioned her for water. I'm prepared with a pencil in case she wants to bite her tongue. Also, we have to have anxious in case she wants to put her nose into the palm of her hand. And then use your handkerchief or a piece of cardboard and burn it once in a while. Also, we carry in our vest pocket a smelling bottle, which a green bottle, just about 1 ounce size, which consists of a sponge with ammonia in it. We put that under the nostrils. Not that one particular woman I was speaking of just now, but the other one, on New Year's Eve, we always work in pairs, you know. We had her, the other one, who happened to be in service. What I mean by in service is a servant in some household.
Yeah.
Might be the cook or might be anything in there.
Domestic house.
Yeah. Well, we had her all evening, from 7 o'clock until about 11. Our regular officer was there, but we sent for our ambulance doctor, and he was there, and he ordered me to strip her to the to the breast, put a stethoscope on there. We got her out of that, and a pal of mine, myself, who lived the same way, both used to work for the Cooperative Society, we lived close together, and we were standing out in front talking. We hadn't left yet, in front of the hall. Pretty soon, the policemen, which are also ambulance men in my own town, brings us rolling back again. And I led them right into the room where we had her before, and I told them we'd had her all evening, and so they left her out of charge. So after we got her out of this, we took her to the car, got on the car behind her, and went, got off the car where she got off, and took her right to the gate of the place where she was in service. Then we went home. Anything we do, we report at the next meeting. We have one every Wednesday. We wear a button with St. John's Ambulance Association on it. Once in a while, we have what we call a church parade. We wear uniforms. I have a photograph of my uniform here. I picked up one on my trip. Then I left there on November the 7th. I sailed from Liverpool, got to Vancouver, B.C. on the 24th day of November, 1 month short to the day from my 20th birthday. Well, my dad was in the real estate business around Vancouver, B.C., and he took me and introduced me to the people at the business.
When did you come to Vancouver?
1906. Yeah. So, I was down the waterfront one day. Oh, he tried to get me... Yes, I went down to the waterfront. And I saw somebody from Manchester, a young fellow from Manchester, 12 miles away from my home. And the blue funnel boat was in port, Lambert and Oak boat flying from Liverpool. Always handled just a bunch of all heavy stuff, such as there's 100 pounds of sheet tin there, tin for making cans and wanting to know. Well, that was this particular stuff is sheet tin. The handles are, you know, for cannons, see?
Yeah, cannons.
Yeah, 100, you put about 12 or 14 of them on a truck and you ask them to careful how you handle them.
Oh, they
pull you right back over. Mm-hmm. Put them like steps, you know, see? And, the iron older. Oh, iron girders,
steel beams and iron girders.
Yeah, iron girders. I remember I got my foot at one night, was wheeling these hamburgers out at 10 o'clock at night, just before 10 was going to quit. And there's a man on the other side, one on each side of this bogey. It's a bogey truck with two wheels, you know. Mm-hmm. There's a man at the back, see, he's guiding it, and there's one of it on each side, see. And somebody said something, and I turned around to look, and it caught my heel, the wheel did. It made me jump to one side, and I was in bed maybe about 2 weeks on that wheel. So, my dad got me a job in a store. I went to the store. They had several things in there. I don't know which department that was in, whether it was going to put me in the clothing or what it was. But I asked them about the wages, and I told them, well, I want to go home and change clothes. And I went home and told my dad, and he told me to go back down to the longshoring. I guess they wasn't offering me enough wages. I'm kind of leaving me over there, see. So I worked there for a while, then I worked at the Hastings sawmill. And finally, from the Hastings sawmill, I saw a job where there's one of the men to haul milking. So I took this job hauling milk from Little Island. I had to go across to the Fraser River, rowed a boat across with empties, and come back with a full one, morning and evening.
What was the name of that island?
Lulu.
Lulu Island.
On the Fraser River.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go back to South Vancouver, see?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's right back there. And then across the river. There's no bridge there. The boat was anchored close to this old bridge, broken down bridge. And we had to row upstream a little ways and then cross over, see? Go with the drift. So I did that for a while, then he put me on the delivering.
Delivering?
Delivering, the milk.
The milk.
Yeah, we went over there to haul it. And so then from, what did I do from there? Oh, I guess I made a mistake. I guess maybe somebody paid me. I couldn't just remember who it was that paid me. The boss got a little sore about it, put me back on the hauling business. And then I took his kids out to the park one time, Stanley Park. And didn't get back in time to shoot him on account of the kids, taking care of the kids, so let me go.
You're fired,
huh? Mm-hmm. Let's see.
Were you hearing about Alaska at that time? Were you hearing about this country up here?
No, I wasn't thinking about this country up here, but later on I worked around some buildings. And then I signed on, the panic was in 1907, I signed on the Empress of Japan for a trip to Japan and China in return, put in part of the winter. Well, we left in March 1908. First stop was Victoria, B.C., then Yokohama, 10 days to Yokohama, then Kobe. Well, the boat was late because the mail was late coming through the Rockies. We had to try and make up this time. It's $500 per day for every day you're over. That's that one day's grace in carrying mail. So we sent the mail on to Kobe by rail instead of having to stop at Kobe. That was a 24-hour run. So we went on to Nagasaki. And then at Nagasaki we took on coal. Men, women and children. There are skiffs alongside. They come alongside the ship. On both sides there are two ladders on each, a ladder on each side. And there's children at the bottom filling up the sticks. They're in sticks and baskets. Some fills them up and others pack them to the bottom step. And they're four deep on each step.
Mm-hmm.
And once they hit that step, it's just one stream.
Mm-hmm. Just like that.
From one end to the other.
Like a basket grid.
Yes, and then the one on the top just drops the coal down there and lets the end to go down.
Mm-hmm.
It just took us 8 hours to coal up. And then we left there. From Nagasaki, it was 2 days on to Shanghai. We stayed outside of Shanghai. I didn't go ashore in any of them places. Taking Yokohama, and they come aboard and want to do your washing, take it ashore and grab it back in 8 hours for 6 cents a garment. But you never offer them the same price that they ask for anything, those that come aboard the ship to sell goods. While we were looking fast, I was in the port watch, and I was forward. The starboard watch handles all ropes aft. The port watch handles all ropes forward. We make fast. That's the part that comes into port.
Mm-hmm.
There's a nose, not the bow.
Yeah, they know the impact.
Yeah. All right, so we make those fast, and when we come down, I generally pass a rope down on my shoulder and put the weight tied underneath the forecastle end. And here they are on the deck, all ready to sell their stuff, and also up above for the passengers. They come up the gangway, and they're to sell goods. Well, what to do for it, what I bought. I bought something one time and took it down below, and the boatswain hollered down there for me and said I'd missed to put away a rope tied in, so I had to come up now. And when I got back down again, whatever it was that I had in my locker in the wall, my wall locker, part of it was gone. The other guy hid from me. I don't remember what it was, no. At this minute. So, Nagasaki. Nagasaki, Shanghai. And in Shanghai, it was about 8 o'clock at night, and I was buying something there off of one of them chinks there. And the boat will come along looking for you. My time to go on watch again for night watch. You see, while they're unloading, there's got to be somebody down that hole there.
Yeah,
to watch them, see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my duty, I suppose, to be on shift down there.
Mm-hmm.
Anything like a night watch, we put in 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he comes to me and he gives me a crowd across the face. I just took one look at him and I hesitated. I was just about to give him one. Just being 21 years old, you know.
Yeah.
I couldn't go for that. He'd just come off from Liverpool to take the other man's place drowned except before he got washed overboard. So you have to pass the inland seas while you have the tough water. You know, going after pass the Aleutian Islands.
Mm-hmm.
Get the Aleutian Island fever. And when you're swabbing the deck there, why you have to stand like this here.
Mm-hmm.
And go with the broom like this as you move along. Yeah. Well, So I just bought some article and I went down below and stood up there. I'd been up all afternoon. See, 4 hours on, 4 hours off. And I hadn't been to bed. So I stood up alongside of a stanchion down there. These fellas singing away, you know. And I'm standing there with my eyes closed. And as soon as anybody starts to come down, then they shake me. Wake up. So outside of that, you go to work. Well, it was 2 days from there to Hong Kong. That was the destination. We were there for 2 days. 3 days in Kowloon and dried up. We paid out the anchor, paid it out, we painted it, we painted the keel. Then we come out in the open. There's no boats docked. They're only coastwise vessels. That's how I felt. And then I was up on both funnels and chipped both funnels and painted them, red lighting and painting. And we got our port watch. We got our watch off one weekend and the other watch. The car would get there the next weekend. We didn't have to come back till Sunday night, see, if we didn't want to. I went ashore one day and forgot about how to be back, you know, and then I found out and then I went back again. I stayed all night. Went downtown and stayed all night someplace.
You'll have to stop a few minutes because this is the end of this reel. I've got to turn it over.
Good.
Oh.